Cancer is the leading cause of death worldwide, and for most of us, its toll is personal. This year, President Obama prioritized scientific research to treat and prevent cancer, putting Vice President Joe Biden in charge of the effort.
I believe we can make exponential progress. I firmly believe we can do in the next 5 years what would ordinarily take 10. And think of what that will mean. Think of how many people you know who are saying, you docs who are saying, Doc, I just want to make it one more month to see my daughter get married. Doc, if I can just make it another 4 months, I'll be able to pay off the house and my wife will be okay when I go. Doc, all I want to do is see my daughter graduate. These are real life things. Time matters. Days matter. Minutes matter.
That's Vice President Joe Biden speaking in June, about a year after he lost his son, Beau Biden, to brain cancer. He was addressing hundreds of doctors and technology leaders at the very first meeting of the Cancer Moonshot Initiative. Joining us today is the head of a Rogue Valley technology firm involved in that effort. It's one to make more therapies available and improve prevention of cancer. Flojo LLC is based in Ashland, and CEO Michael Stadnitsky joins us now in the studio. Michael, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We just heard Vice President Biden say we can do in the next 5 years what would ordinarily take 10. Have we seen that kind of bounding advance in cancer research in recent years?
No, and we're really at the exponential right now. So we've approached a time period where, and I agree with Vice President Biden's statement that he made when he was at Duke University, the science is ready. And we say that excitedly, but also with a huge amount of anticipation. And so what do I mean by the science is ready?
Mm-hmm.
Our ability to interrogate cells, to examine disease in a patient, to diagnose early and to discover and direct therapy for a patient is at an incredible, really watershed moment. So if you can imagine right now, you know, going out, for instance, so to continue this, you know, celestial analogy, you know, we're at the point now where when you go into, you go into your doctor, we can ask about, let's say, 8 questions, you know, per individual cell, right? So they grab your cells out of your, out of a patient, and they say, what's going on here? You know, what kind of cancer does this person have, and what would the therapy be best targeted? We're at a period now where we're going to be able to take that and go an order of magnitude higher, right? And to look at 40 questions per cell. And then we actually, an announcement that we just made last week, we're going to be able to ask 10 or even 30,000 questions per cell. And why is that important, right? It's not just important because it's basic research. It's important because it gives us more targets for drug, more precise therapies, and a huge amount of resolution that we can now interrogate all the different types of cancer and the causes of morbidity and mortality.
And these questions, do we know which questions to ask if we have the ability, or do we have is that where Flojo comes in, I guess?
That's where we come in. And so, you know, the Cancer Moonshot Initiative really tackles cancer across, if you consider it along sort of 2 axes. One is the patient life cycle. So you've got, you know, the from patient access to care to actually being in the hospital, and how is that care being given. And then also sort of on the therapeutic, so the diagnosis and therapy side. We sort of sit behind that, the therapeutic end of that. So our current flagship software, which is used by 97.5% people who are using our technology to interrogate biology in this way, is used by all the leading pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies, as well as research universities and hospitals, you know, to make these advances that have gotten us to the point where the science is ready. And so, you know, highlight for that would be, there's actually, we now have the ability to go in and edit our immune cells so that they can actually go in and eradicate and truly cure, you know, to capital C cure cancer in a patient. And so,
right. Yeah. I'm cautious about using that word cure now that you mention it, because it is, we talk about treatment and prevention, but our big C words, cancer and cure, it's not necessarily the pairing of a cautious optimist. You said the science is ready. What aspect has not been ready in terms of biomedical science in treating, preventing, and let's say it, curing cancer?
It's a great question. So, you know, I'd liken our treatments, you know, up until this point, really, you know, thinking about it almost like we have a world is flat type of mentality. We go into the immune system with a sledgehammer and we say, all right, we're going to eradicate the tumor using a huge sledgehammer. And now we're at the point where we're using a scalpel. And now it's going to become much more targeted, right, where we'll just be able to target the individual cells that are actually the causative agents of cancer and of metastases. So that's been a fundamental shift in our paradigm about where we are in terms of examining and treating and coming up with new treatments for the disease.
Is there currently a good system for genomic researchers or technology-based firms such as yours, which are creating, it seems like, the infrastructure to understand cancer? Is there a way that these people are able to collaborate with actual oncologists and patients and medical professionals we might more immediately think of in terms of cancer treatment?
This and regulatory issues are the two hot button issues that the Cancer Moonshot is going to help us with, hopefully, right? So, you know, Vice President Biden put this out and said, hey, we can get a nuclear deal done with Iran, but I'm having a harder time trying to break down these walls of collaboration across the clinical research spectrum or in between different companies that are making pharmaceuticals. And so, you know, we think that this can accelerate that by providing a collaboration environment for, you know, engaging clinicians all the way to basic research. I would say that the infrastructure isn't all the way there yet. So we actually are building a collaboration and communication tool that we think could be a fundamental piece of that chain of communication, if you will, that chain of custody, all the way from developing a treatment and getting it into the clinic, and then vice versa.
And tell us more about that tool. Is it related to the flagship software for Flojo? Could we, I guess, walk us back, you know, how did Flojo get started and how do you fit into this mosaic of the Cancer Moonshot Initiative, which is a nationwide initiative bringing together a lot of people involved?
It is. And so, you know, so right now we have our flagship product. It was a, we spun out of Stanford in 1997, moved the company up here in 2003. And in that time have grown to become, you know, a major tool used in taking a look at what is the current reality of thousands of individual cells in a patient or in a research study. And so that's what we currently have out there. As I mentioned, it's used by, you know, everyone that's using this technology called flow cytometry, you know, which sounds like rocket science, but all we're doing is interrogating individual cells one at a time. And we can ask multiple questions on the current reality of that cell. What we're working on are two other types of projects. One is, you know, we have Flojo, and then we're coming up with SeqGeek, which is because we're geeks for sequencing. And this is the ability to interrogate every gene, that an individual cell is expressing. It's several thousand cells at a time. And then the third piece of infrastructure that we're building is this collaboration and communication tool, because, you know, the research and the analysis doesn't occur in a vacuum, right? We have to collaborate to get these experiments done. Generally speaking, it involves multiple people, or as you mentioned, it can involve multiple people across the vertical, you know, of patient care back to research. So we have to provide an infrastructure in which they will live and where this collaboration and communication can occur. So that's where our development efforts are right now.
We are talking with the CEO of Flojo LLC, an Ashland-based data analysis company. Michael Stadnitsky is our guest. I'm Emily Curitan, and you can join this discussion 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Michael, you're talking about building a tool here, partnering with another company, Illumina, which they are widely known for genetic sequencing. Is this tool going to be something that's widely shared and accessible? I mean, do researchers actually tend to guard their intellectual property in this field, despite perhaps some pretty obvious moral imperatives not to?
Yeah, it's an interesting problem that we have. Genomics and genetics and gene sequencing has a much richer history of sharing all of their data. So you can go on right now to the NIH website and you can Google any gene and learn everything about it, right? It's gene sequence in the DNA, which is like the score of the symphony, the times when it's being played, you know, so how it's being expressed. And then all of a sudden around, you know, the protein world and the current reality, things sort of drop off, right? So there's actually not a lot of data sharing on the side of this flow cytometry, of this current reality. And so we think we have an opportunity to bring all of this together to enable data sharing across the spectrum from sequencing all the way through into, as I mentioned, the current reality that's in a patient. It's a key barrier to accelerating research, data sharing, and publicly publishing data along with a publication. So, when researchers publish their data or they come out with a clinical trial, there's an onus on the federal agencies to say, no, you must share that data. You must also publish the data with that or provide it for sharing in an ecosystem where it can actually be used.
There is that onus official? Is it regulatory, or is it just like you're a bad person if you don't?
Yeah, and on the genetic side, it is regulatory. It's written into the grants. There needs to be more emphasis put on the data sharing plan, particularly for NIH grants. What kind of data needs to be shared? When in the process of research? Because you do want to guard their ability to publish first or their ability to commercialize a drug, because that's what keeps the investment alive, but. It's not just publish your data or make it available. It's where are you putting that data so that people can get access to it, so that other research can unlock that, so that they can help answer their questions and also not repeat an experiment that you've already done.
And you have likened FloJo's work on this project to building the Hubble telescope for biologists. Could you extrapolate on that a little bit for us?
Yes. And so right now, if you've ever seen a pair of, big binoculars, so these are tripod-mounted binoculars, what they give you is 40-fold magnification of any celestial body. So, you can look at some stars and you can make out features on the moon, but it's not that good, right? And that's where we are right now in our ability to interrogate single cells. Okay, so the Hubble telescope, controlled for not having an atmosphere in its way, has 10,000-fold effective magnification. I mean, we've seen these beautiful images, right, where we can peer into the galaxy and really start understanding the way that our universe works. That's what we're doing at a much smaller scale at FloJo, and it's the same type of thing. So we are currently looking at 40 questions on a cell. We're right at the precipice of answering 10,000 or even 30,000 questions on an individual cell. So the way that we like to talk about it is the Hubble telescope for biology, because we will be able to peer into the mystery of our single cells. And they have so much to tell us about the processes of health and disease.
Let's take a call. We have John and Grants Pass on the line. John, thank you for calling The Exchange. And you landed on the sticky button. There you are. Welcome to the air. Hi. John.
Thank you for taking my call. Pancreatic cancer. My aunt passed away from it, and I understand that the survival rate on it is really horrible. Are they making any progress on it, or I guess my other question is, why is it so deadly? Thanks.
Thanks, John.
John, thank you for your question and for sharing your story, too. I worked for a pancreatic cancer startup for a while and actually modeled out, the process of diagnosis and disease there. It's a very aggressive cancer, and it's detected very late in the cycle. And so by the time the pancreatic cancer is detected, I think, as you know from your own story, it's almost always too late. And this isn't really, pancreatic cancer is an example where we needed high-resolution tools to be able to pull out a target for therapy. And so that's actually what I worked on. There was a target for therapy that we could also paint, if you will, tumor targets that are within the pancreatic cancer tumor, so we could discover one molecule that was really the hinge point for the cancer that made it so aggressive within the pancreas. And so we could actually develop drug targets that targeted that one individual molecule. And so the technology we're working on should do that, as I mentioned, at several order of magnitudes better. And so that's a little bit about the background of pancreatic cancer. And I think there's larger hope in these types of cancers that are very aggressive that we detect late. We should be able to detect this earlier, period. The ability to actually assay patients earlier and detect things that we're losing right now is going to be much greater. Our ability to detect new targets for something like pancreatic cancer will be absolutely better because of these advances that I'm talking about.
Is the work you're doing for Cancer Moonshot aimed at prevention or treatment?
At this point, it's aimed entirely at treatment, and we'll move a little bit into the diagnosis, later as we mature this technology. And prevention is something that is really a black box for us right now, and I don't think that we've been able to formulate the questions, nor have we had the tools to get us into prevention yet. And I think the answer is we're getting to see cancer at a state where it's already so advanced, right? So he just, you know, we just had a caller and he described, you know, when you're diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, it's generally speaking, it's very progressed. We're not getting to see what, you know, how do we get to there? How do we get to that point? And when we can start asking those kind of questions and really start, if you will, tracking back the line of cause and effect that got us there, then I think we'll have a much better handle on, okay, well, what activated those original things that got us through it to this etiology where now we're seeing cancer? But we haven't even gotten to the point where we can track that back yet.
Right. Could you envision a time when genetic sequencing, I mean, all of us getting a map of your genetic sequence is sort of like getting a checkup, and this 40,000 question answer, 40,000 answers to every cell, the metaphor you lay out, where right now we can ask each cell about 8 questions. With technology Flojo's working on, we'd up that to 40,000. Would that make it so that people would have a, you know, maybe from childhood or very early in life, have an extremely nuanced idea of their risk and what to get screened for and how to prevent?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the great thing that we can do there is you can, you know, you serve as your own baseline. So one of the things that we have a really hard time with right now is, what is a healthy immune system? What is the real definition of health? We have a colloquial definition of health. We don't have a molecular definition of health. And so if you know, you can imagine going into the clinic and having this occur for you over the period of years, and we can see your baseline. And then we can detect very early for any type of disease. And I do mean that because, you know, fundamentally disease occurs at a single cell level. We just can't get away from that, right? I always joke with people that we spent 3 billion years a single cell. So we have some memory there, right? But, you know, we need to think about how we can diagnose patients earlier and provide earlier detection for diseases using this technology.
We've been talking with Flojo CEO Michael Stadnitsky. Michael, there's so much to talk about here. We've barely scratched the surface. We look forward to having you back on the Jefferson Exchange as your work with the Cancer Moonshot Initiative progresses. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you, Emily.